This is the one set on a glorious blue planet.
With amethyst seas and a perfect symmetry of sand dunes.
And big evil crocodiles.
Controlled by a gigantic skull.
It contains an evil Lucy.
And a defenestrated dock.
It's called The Skull of Sobek.
Here we go.
We're viewing audiobooks now too, cause we love our Doctor Who.
Encountering we're into our mother war, Dalek, space-time and glam rock.
Styler phones are awful, that's a TARDIS way. We're at Spunk and Merryskin.
That's Kane with a K.
Who back where? Reviewing all of who there is. Who back where?
Subscribe and rate on iTunes, please.
Audiobook by audiobook.
Even those that are gobbly good, we'll review them all you see. So join us on this odyssey.
It's Who Back When.
Who Back When.
Hello and welcome to episode A010 of Who Back When, a Doctor Who podcast. I am Punkin.
Yes, you are.
And you are...
I'm JD.
Yes, you are. I was hoping you were going to go, and I'm JD. I still have not yes, you are'd you.
No,
I don't.
Well, I get in first.
It's going to happen. Well, that's what she said. All right, so today we are reviewing The Skull of Sobek, which, spoiler alert, is not, you know, the greatest of episodes.
It's not Dead London.
No.
The Skull of Sobek is... It's not a bad episode. It's not Phobos. It's not Dead London. It's not Horror of Glamrock.
No. It's a very well-crafted story.
And it has got amazing mental visuals, as we will come to.
Yes.
And it's got some great ideas.
That's very true. But as, ladies and gentlemen, as you're going to find out over the next 45 minutes or so, there is a metric nut-ton of plot elements that you can very clearly just tear to bits.
And plot holes. Which you can very nearly fall into.
Yeah.
So let's move on with our bite-sized chunk of Who.
Are we getting a song from you today? By the way, at Zath on Twitter, really sorry we still haven't provided you with sound bites for a jingle.
If you haven't got sound bites by this episode, poke at Ponkin, because it's not me. I've recorded so many sound bites for this. I've even sung on a number of episodes
You have only sung.
On three.
That's very true. That is very true. By the way, ladies and gentlemen, let's have another tangent. This may very well be the first slightly tipsy episode of Who Back When, just saying. Alright, take it away.
It's now time for the bite-sized chunk of Who.
The Doc and Lucy materialise on a blue planet, appropriately called Indigo 3.
Where a horde of violent protesters are attempting to gain entrance to a nearby monastery.
They fail to do so, the Doc and Lucy don't fail.
And thus they are embroiled in an age-old civil war fought between two warring factions of, crocodiles?
It transpires that the monks have been having disturbing visions of late.
And it's up to the Doc and Lucy to decipher the mysterious visions before the rains come.
And that was your bite-sized chunk of Who.
Yeah, B-Scout over and done with. You're welcome, people.
So, we are starting off with The Skull of Sobek, written by Mark Platt. Now, normally we don't talk about the writer, unless we hate them, fuck Bill Strutton. But Mark Platt, who is the writer of this, does have a prior Doctor Who connection.
Ooh, tell me more, JD.
He wrote one of the better Sylvester McCoy episodes.
Mm.
The one where we delved into...
Oh, you wrote for TV, that's awesome.
Yes.
Okay.
He wrote one of the better episodes. We delve into Dorothy McShane, otherwise better known as Ace's background. In an episode called Ghostlight.
Okay.
And Mark Platt wrote Ghostlight. He's also a book writer, and the Doctor Who novels are not generally considered Doctor Who canon for a variety of reasons, but they were written by both Virgin and the BBC.
Okay.
And, you know, in the wilderness years between the end of Survival and the coming of Paul McGann in the Doctor Who movie, the books were there before Big Finish turned up.
Yeah, and they were basically the only thing that fans had to cling on to.
Exactly, and they were... You know, they were official.
Yeah.
Although they're not canon, and that's important to note, because Mark Platt wrote the most important of all of the non-canon novels. A novel called Lungbarrow, which was one of the quite late ones. I think it's either the last or the next last Sylvester McCoy novel. And Lungbarrow peers into the Doctor's history for possibly the most detailed history of the Doctor and where he comes from ever written.
Ooh.
And it's generally considered one of the best, and Mark Platt wrote it.
Wow. Well done, Mark. Have you read it?
I've read Lungbarrow, yes. There's so much of it which is contradicted by television.
Oh, really? Hence, it is not canon.
And it's not canon.
Mm.
But it is a very good story, and prior to some of the things on Doctor Who and a lot of the things around the Time War, Lungbarrow was generally considered to be a very, very detailed history of Gallifrey.
Okay. Awesome tangent. Thank you very much. Great trivia.
So, Abbot Absolute... and Sister Chalice.
Okay, so, well, we start off the episode, we still don't know who these people are, but we start off the episode with someone reading from The Triumphs of Sobek, which are these revelations. They're essentially sort of biblical passages about these two dudes called Sobek and Slab, who had a little bit of a falling out.
The Prince of Sobek.
Prince of Sobek?
Yes.
God damn it, that answers approximately 50 questions in my notes, by the way.
Right, no, it is the two people are Snab and he's termed the Old Prince of Sobek, but he's basically the prince.
Does he have a name?
Yes, the Old Prince of Sobek.
But that's not a name, that's a title. Terrible name is that.
What's going on? Terrible name is Ponkin.
That's a great name. I'm biased, obviously.
There we go. Right?
Okay, but, fine.
Right?
All right. Yeah, okay, yeah, okay.
Ponkin and Marius Kane were at the temple in the wallow.
Marius Kane, I've never heard something so ridiculous. Anyway, all right,
how do you
fine.
Spell Marius Kane?
That's Kane with a K, my friend.
I prefer mine with a C. Right.
Anyway, so we're starting off with this reading from a pseudo-biblical passage about the triumphs of Sobek. And as we're hearing this reading, we sort of fade into, I guess, a reenactment of this reading. But it turns out later on, very possibly a vision of this reading.
Correct. They're reading it, and then you get the voices of the Old Prince and Snab.
Yeah.
And they're obviously having this battle about who is going to control this world, who is going to be in charge. And they're doing it before something called the Skull of Sobek.
This is... I'm so miffed right now because I've made so many jokes.
Don't.
Anyway, yeah, so right off the bat, by the way, I'm picturing Hamlet. Because what we
very
see is...
So.
Yeah. I was going to say, see, we hear the Prince of Sobek talking to the Skull of Sobek. And it's very much like you're picturing Hamlet, except, obviously, spoiler alert, he's a crocodile. But that's basically what happens, and then Snab turns up. He appears pretty much just out of nowhere, declares his intention to turn Sobek, or the Prince of Sobek, into luggage, and they fight. It's basically a coup d'etat.
It is. And yeah. Our two actors here, our Snab is played by Sean Biggerstaff. Now...
Great name.
Sean Biggerstaff.
Oh my god, wait, hang on. Let's take a moment to just appreciate what a fantastic name that is. Go ahead.
Sean Biggerstaff is quite a young actor. His most famous role was actually as Oliver Wood in the Harry Potter.
Okay, yeah.
His most famous role was as Oliver Wood in Harry Potter.
Wait, hang on, who's Oliver Wood?
He was the Quidditch...
Oh really, that's him?
Yes.
Oh cool, okay.
But he does have a prior Doctor Who connection.
Oh, pray tell.
One of the most famous missing episodes was one that was never filmed.
Okay.
Or it was only partially filmed due to a strike, and it was called Sharda, Tom Baker episode.
I've heard of this one. It's a legendary one. There are like four different versions of it out.
And in one of those versions, there was an alternate universe version of Sharda with Lala Ward, who played Romana in the original Sharda.
Okay.
Starring alongside the Eighth Doctor, Paul McGann. And the role of Chris Parsons in Sharda was played by Sean Biggerstaff.
That's fantastic. So you might say that Biggerstaff has quite a significant girth as an actor.
The Old Prince of Sobek. The Old Prince of Sobek is played, and this is probably the important one for the episode, by a person called Giles Watling. Giles Watling is the son of Jack Watling. Jack Watling played Travers in the Troughton episodes, The Abominable Snowman and The Web of Fear.
Holy crap, a Yeti episode.
Yes, the two Yeti episodes, both Abominable Snowman and Web of Fear, are the two Yeti episodes, where the Yeti actually appears for the entire episode and doesn't vanish.
Wait, hang on. So, are you telling me that the Yeti is a Troughton story?
Two Troughton stories.
Two Troughton stories.
Correct.
Let me just pop in a tiny little fuck you to the troll who sent the most heinously worded email to us saying that it wasn't Troughton because after Marco Polo, I think, there's a Yeti in Marco Polo. We made some reference to the Yeti turning up later on. Such a I'll send it to you. I'll forward it to you. Such a horrifically phrased email about how ill-prepared we are.
I know an awful lot about Doctor Who. This may come as a surprise to you.
Not at all. I know very little about the universe, but this I know for true.
The Abominable Snowman and The Web of Fear are both Troughton episodes. The Web of Fear is an incredibly famous episode because it is the first one where Nicholas Courtney plays Lethbridge Stewart, who would become a brigadier, but in Web of Fear he was playing a colonel, I think.
Okay.
So, and I think it was either that or The Invasion where Benton was the first one. But either way, they are definitely, without a doubt, black and white Troughtons.
I hope that troll is listening to this episode right now. Anyway, yeah...
He is, so the Prince of Sobek is played by Giles Watling.
I was going to say, on a different note, we still have the first scene of Skull of Sobek.
The the son of Jack Watling, played Travers in those two episodes.
Yeah, okay.
Jack Watling, on the other hand, is not just Travers from those two episodes. He is the father, Deborah Watling.
That rings a bell.
Who played the Doctor Who companion, Victoria Waterfield, the one at the 50th convention was up on stage with Fraser Hines.
Oh my god! So, we saw her!
So Giles Watling is the brother of Debbie Watling. So he had, this is probably the biggest of the Doctor Who connections we've met, because he is the brother of a actual Doctor Who companion that we have met in person.
Yes, we have. Very cool. That's a fantastic trivia bit.
Thank you very much.
Other stuff happens in this episode.
Oh yeah, yeah. Oh yeah, that's right. There is an actual episode. Would you like to go on?
Yes, so man and woman then say that they are alone here. This sanctuary has been closed off from the outside, and the female, the sister, basically asks for protection from the fires that consumed Sobek.
Sure. Tiny little question here.
Yeah.
It's a monastery.
Correct.
Correct. I mean, to be fair, I'm a foreigner, but as in English is not my first language, but a monastery is a place where monks are, correct?
Correct.
There's a woman here.
Right.
There are nuns in this episode.
Yes, this monastery does seem to cater to both, as they call them later, the brethren and the sisters.
So oh, they do? Oh, I missed that. Okay.
It is both monks and nuns. They are together. It's less of a monastery and probably more of a bit of a church, really.
Yeah, exactly.
But they're on an alien planet.
Okay, fine. Fair enough.
So anyway, the man and the woman are played by, respectively, Art Malik. Art Malik has never been in Doctor Who.
But that name rings a massive bell.
He was, his most famous role is Jewel in the Crown, which is seminal British period drama. Art Malik is a very famous actor. And the woman, the sister, is played by Barbara Flynn. She also does a lot of period drama, being a dramedy, as they call them nowadays, called the Beiderbecke trilogy.
Okay, all right.
But they've never been Doctor Who before, so we'll skip over them.
Yeah, who cares? No, thank you very much. I had no idea. I've not heard of her before. Anyway, so we cut from man and woman. These are, did we say this, by the way? The Abbot Absolute and the Sister Chalice.
Yes.
We cut from them to two young men chatting on the radio. And they are not just clearly American. They are, this is my theory anyway, I don't know if I'm right, you will know this, I think that they are Haid and the Drewmeister of Phobos fame.
I'm actually going to look this up.
Okay.
Because, frankly, I don't think they are. And I haven't made any notes on who these people are, which would indicate to me that they've not been in Doctor Who or Big Finish before.
Okay, that's very possible.
No for Drew.
God damn it.
Sorry, no for Haid.
No for Haid, okay. I'm still going to be referring to him as the Haidmeister. Don't care.
No for Drew.
God damn it. I'm sorry, I'm coming across as very racist here, because to me, clearly, Americans all sound alike. I apologise.
I work for an American company and I have a lot of American friends. The comments of @Ponkin do not apply to me today.
Wow. Okay, fine. But before we go on, here's a little word from our sponsors. Who Back When, a Doctor Who podcast, is brought to you today by Who Back When, a Doctor Who podcast. I know what you're thinking. Life's really good, but what would make it even better is if I could somehow show my appreciation for Who Back When. Well, you can stop breathing into that brown paper bag, my friend, because these life improvement tips are addressed to you. Personally. Not kidding. Through the marvel of podcasting technology, we've tailor-made this message just for you. Step 1. Like us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/whobackwhen. Step 2. Follow us on Twitter. I'm @Ponkin. He's @MariusKane. Step 3. Subscribe to us on iTunes. And if you like the show, please do leave a rating and review to let everyone know you share a warped worldview. Try it. It'll make your hair grow out real soft and shiny. That's a Who Back When guarantee. That's it for this interruption. Thanks for your support, and thanks for listening. Now on with the show. So
Tangent and Danahill.
Yeah, Tangent and Danahill. That's his name, yeah, Danahill. They're on the radio, they're chatting. One of them, Tangent, is in the monastery. He's Brother Tangent, quote-unquote. The other one, Danahill, is among the, in the bite-sized chunker who mentions rather violent protesters. And he says so, like, well, I realise that your head's been shaved, I realise that you're in a monastery, but at the very least you don't need to sit around with all these gun-toting, laser-rifle-toting madmen out here in the Blue Desert. But then, the Haidmeister, by which I mean Tangent, thinks that he may have heard something.
Because they've been asking about the visions, which they haven't come for the past few days. But he arrives at the new hall, basically, no one's allowed to go into.
Yeah. And there's like a huge pool there.
And he can hear something moving in the pool. And then everything is filled with fire.
And this is a vision, basically. This is one of those occasions that we encountered at the very start of the episode, where we hear something, but then all of a sudden sudden we're actually living in. And that's what's happening to him as well now.
The room is filled with fire, and then what we hear is, and Danahill hears, is basically Tangent being
eaten. Yeah, yeah, pretty good.
One of those episodes where you hear a lot of people getting eaten.
Anyway, so Blammo, the TARDIS, materializes, and it turns out we are on the planet Indigo 3. I'm gonna choose not to comment on the name. Turns out this planet is super blue.
Yeah, they're on a roof. The Doctor is deliberately on a roof this time, not accidentally on a roof or accidentally on the side of a mountain. And everything here is blue. Yeah. The sand dunes are blue.
There's more about the sand dunes, though. They're not just blue. They are, for lack of a better expression, they are perfect.
Yes,
they're all identical.
Perfectly symmetrical. They are perfectly... they go away from you perfectly in straight lines. They are absolutely perfect. And this monastery that they've landed on top is deliberately put here to be out of place. It is not symmetrical. It
exactly.
is something which is in this desert of perfections, just an oasis of imperfection.
Yeah. That's actually something that we failed to mention in the very, very opening lines of this episode. There's something along the lines of lead us not into perfection.
Yes.
As opposed to temptation.
Well, this is called the sanctuary of imperfect symmetry.
Symmetry, yes, that's right. That's very right. So the Doctor is now explaining this. I kind of want to put a pin in this, because perfection versus imperfection is going to come up a little bit later on in this audiobook, and it's not going to make much sense, at the very least to me. Anyway, Lucy notices that everything's perfectly symmetrical. Everything is just... It is almost having this weird flummoxing effect on her mental state, just because you never encounter this.
No, you never see anything perfection. Yeah. But you know, Lucy says they're on top of a building, so...
Yeah, but there is one thing that they do notice, and that is the encampment of all these... Well, we know, they don't know yet, are these protesters.
Or as Lucy calls it, Glastonbury.
Yeah, exactly. Like Glastonbury, but bluer.
So what she does is she leans over and goes, "Aya!" Unfortunately, they don't wave back. They actually shoot at her.
Yeah, yeah. They laser blast the shit out of the TARDIS. Start firing at them. So it's gone from Glastonbury to basically like a Docklands rave. And they run towards the monastery.
And they come across Absolute and Chalice.
Not at first. First, they encounter Brother Proximus. They've got great names, by the way. They encounter Brother Proximus, who is... Yes, he is also blue. And he refuses them entry. We don't really find out what happens here. But we cut to... Absolute and Chalice, who are essentially stitching the body of Brother Tangent back together.
And Absolute says that, gonna say that Brother Tangent died in sleep, that it was quiet, and Absolute does not want any problems brought to this monastery.
Would you say that he's, like, absolutely against it?
No.
Okay. Anyway, yeah, so while she's crocheting Brother Tangent's body back into one piece, we learn that whatever it is that killed Brother Tangent is part of it, or was part of, a group of refugees within the monastery. And Absolute and Chalice start discussing all these various ways of remedying the situation outside. The Abbot has one suggestion in particular. He says, how about we... Basically, he spin doctors it. He basically goes like, how about we say that there's some sort of contagion and no one can gain access to the monastery because we're all infected. Cue Kablamatron, Doctor arrives.
So the Doc and Lucy turn up, they're normal selves, cheery, happy, and the Doc overhears them talking about this
contagion. Yeah.
And says, well, I'm a doctor, right? This is a place for sick and injured. Let's go and see what we can do here.
Yeah.
Oh, he's happy.
But Abbott and Chalice won't have it. No. Abbott in particular basically goes, well, listen, Doc and female person next to you, go fuck yourselves. You're not welcome here. At which point, Doc and Lucy start blackmailing them. They basically go, listen, we're going to go to the media unless you let us stay here. Okay, I've got a question for you. Like, this makes no freaking sense to me. I assume that for a moment that the Abbot is basically, like, scratching his groin and thinking, you know what? Yeah, you guys should go to the media. Because the only thing that the Doctor has heard so far is there's a contagion. Because he's thinking, okay, I can use this as an excuse. I'm the Doctor. I can help out, right? If he were to leave, the Abbot would be thinking any publicity is good publicity. Because what he really wants is to let people know, or let people think, rather, that there is an epidemic. And if the Doctor and Lucy go out and they actually fulfill their side of the blackmailing bargain, would assume that there is a contagion, thus the Abbot would be rescued. In fact, if the Abbot had been slightly less of a prick, right now the episode would be over.
Yes, that would absolutely true. And they would have got thrown the Doc and Lucy out, they wouldn't have found out any more information, and they would have gone TARDIS and gone away.
Probably.
Unfortunately, Abbot is so slow in coming to that conclusion, then notices Tangent, goes, well, that doesn't look very much like a contagion. In fact, it looks like he was bitten in half and then stitched back together again.
Yeah, badly. You can still see the scar, basically. Yeah,
there's been a lot of crochet.
And even Gunn's like, hey, are there any crocodiles around?
Are there any crocodiles around here?
Yeah. So Abbott is outraged, but Chalice says, you know what, it's fine, you guys can stay, let's put you in guest room number 3. Cut to guest room number 3, where they are locked in.
Prison cell number 3.
Yeah, exactly. And this is where Lucy all of a sudden develops this weird, really sappy conscience. She goes, oh, do you reckon that I'm getting used to seeing dead people? Aw.
I know what's in store for you, Lucy Miller. And then she realises she's a kleptomaniac.
Yeah.
Obviously, she's been listening to Springfield Sophie in the last episode.
Yeah, Dead London.
Oh, no. God, it was so long ago.
Yeah.
In Dead London. And she's got Brother Tangent's mobile phone.
Yeah, which she purloined from his cold, dead corpse.
The doctor says, right, you should stop stealing things, and then promptly goes to work on it.
Yeah, exactly. And it turns out, presumably, this is a smartphone because it has a video recording, it has lots of missed calls and whatever. They have a look at the video recording.
And what they see is it is what we saw earlier in the episode. It is Tangent being burnt by the flames.
Yeah, but I'm not sure if I got this correctly. The impression that I got was that Lucy is having some sort of vision as well, because yeah, she's seeing things that the doc isn't seeing.
Yeah, so while the doc is playing it on the smartphone, Lucy is reliving.
Bingo, yes. And she says, yeah, there are two people fighting and whatnot.
And so the doctor says, yeah, he saw the flames on the screen, but Lucy was being a bit sensitive and actually...
I get it now, okay.
And actually feeling it as well. And Lucy says that there were two people there fighting. Two big, tall creatures.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's obviously the old Prince of Sobek and...
Yeah, exactly. It's Crocodile Dundee and Croc Monsieur. Anyway.
I'm hungry now.
Stop starving as well. So anyway, yeah, so further to this video recording, the doctor finds a few other things as well. He finds a few notes about the planet Sobek, and he finds some message from some chick who's saying, oh, they're definitely here.
And then she asks Tangent to meet them in the new hall and don't say anything.
Yeah, exactly.
But
that ended really well for him.
Yeah, Sister Thrift, whose entire thing in this episode was on this vidcon just now, never appears again, is a female character in season 2 of the 8th Doctor Adventures.
Therefore, no way.
Contractually, she's played by Catriona Olsen.
Of course she is. Of course. Oh, that's fantastic.
Who surprisingly has a prior Doctor Who connection. Having played every female part this season.
In every story so far, yeah. Anyway, so the doctor tries to dial her number. No dice, dog. And then we get a cutscene of the abbot's confession, essentially, to Sister Chalice. That is to say, he thinks it's just Sister Chalice, because blammo, it's Croc Monsieur. It is a crocodile who says, bring me the doctor. The skull has chosen him.
Yeah, it's the old prince.
Yeah, and then we get another cutscene. Is this another thing that kind of bothered you? This totally bothered me with this episode. There are so many cutscenes. Like, you could turn approximately half of this episode into a bullet point list.
Yes, yeah. You can. It's meaningful things happen in some of the cutscenes, but most of them are not relevant to the story and would be better served by actual in-character exposition rather than this meanwhile in the convent or meanwhile in Sobek's brain.
Yeah, exactly.
A lot of it was just nonsense.
I agree. And on that note...
And we get...
another cutscene.
Another cutscene. Yeah. And the old prince is basically saying that to his soldiers that about Snab, and we discover that the old prince of Sobek has his champion, and Snab will have to find his own.
Yeah.
So they require...
And when they're free, they're all going to kick ass.
Yeah, basically. So they require two champions. And we've got two choices for who might those champions be.
Two people that we've encountered before, you
think? Well, it's either going to be the Doc and Lucy, or it's going to be Abbott and Chalice.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Absolute and Chalice.
Absolute and Chalice, yeah. I hadn't even considered Absolute and Chalice. Spoiler alert, it's going to be Doc and Lucy. So, alright. We get even more cutscenes. We get, first of all, monks chanting, and I guess sort of assembling. And then we get another cutscene, the crocs chanting something inaudible, is what I've written. Yada, yada, yada. Who cares? Anyway, back with Doc and Lucy.
Who are going back to the skills that Lucy learnt in Dead London, and are climbing out of the window.
Well done, Lucy.
She learnt a lot from Springfield.
Yeah, she learnt from experience. Right. Yeah, well done. Yeah. Anyway, so this is where I want to get back to the pin that we placed in the very, very beginning. Because Lucy and Doc, they have this conversation in which, I don't remember this verbatim, Lucy basically says that she wants a solution to the problem ASAP. And the doctor goes, there is, that would be a perfect, that's the word he uses, that would be a perfect situation, but nothing in the universe is perfect. If you are in any place in the entire freaking universe, this place in particular is where you might find perfection. Because you are in a fucking desert, in an audiobook that started off with being referenced as a perfect
problem here is that there is a lot of ideas which happen around perfection. But
yeah, but I don't think that they really thought it through.
No, the problem is that they're talking about two very similar things. They're talking about symmetry and they're talking about perfection, and they use them quite interchangeably.
Yeah,
symmetry is incredibly important, and the difference between good and evil and counterbalancing each other.
Sure,
that's very important in this episode. Perfection.
It
would be a red herring if it was deliberately done that way. Sadly, they just seem to mix up two similar ideas, but get them wrong. Because the, spoilers, ending of this episode is about symmetry. It's not about perfection.
Sure.
Meanwhile...
Fine, yeah, go for it.
The Doc and Lucy, having climbed out of the window, make the way to the new hall. And they have conversations on the way about symmetry and perfection.
And who, no one gives a shit.
And no one cares. And they arrive at a door which is quite handily marked by the words healing pool. And it was built by donations from an anonymous benefactor.
Ooh. I actually didn't even notice that.
They also think, there's a healing pool, and Tangent was soaking wet.
Yeah.
What confused me about that is Tangent died quite a while ago.
Yeah. Why is he still wet?
In a desert.
In a desert, yeah.
Why is he still wet?
I don't know.
They find that the new hall has been flooded. There's water everywhere.
Yes.
And...
Well, there would be. There's a pool.
There's a pool. Yeah. And now they find a miniature crocodile. And we get the world's most stupid exposition. Lucy Miller, who we have known as a heroine for the past two seasons. She's quirky.
Yeah.
She's very forthright. She's very opinionated. And she shopped at Primark.
She's a very strong character.
She's a very strong character. And she's quite balanced.
Yeah.
In her own way.
But also, sorry to return to the strong bit, you would imagine, having encountered this character on so many occasions of the past two seasons, every single episode, in fact, you would imagine that if anything can get the better of her, it would be something quite rational and quite fearsome.
Yeah, like being scared of Daleks or...
Exactly.
Or robots after human resources and Blood of the Daleks.
Yeah. But instead...
She's terrified of crocodiles.
And why is she terrified of crocodiles?
Because this episode requires her to be terrified of crocodiles.
Yes.
Oh, sorry, you mean the in-universe reason? Because she once saw Peter Pan.
Yes, there you go. Yeah.
Utterly ridiculous.
I mean, I'm sorry, that is quite a disappointing turn of
it was an utterly ridiculous characterization. As far as I'm aware, never gets mentioned again, gets forgotten, and thank God for that.
Yeah, very good.
Because she has bigger things to be afraid of coming up. Spiders. Spiders would be good.
Spiders would be great.
Snakes. Big snakes. The Mara. Big snakes. Fine. That would be cool. Crocodiles. Because of watching Peter Pan. Believe one single word of it. Oh, and then you see a dead body.
Exactly. And who is this but Sister Thrift?
Played by, this time, a silent Katarina Olsen.
Yeah, but
who's just lying there in the water.
But you know what? No one does a dead body floating in a pool of water better than Katarina Olsen. I mean, what a performance.
Well, it's a female body. So it has to be played by Katarina Olsen.
I mean, you could tell, is the thing. Anyway, so, kablamo, there's another vision, and now the water catches fire, and the croc appears, saying, basically, hey, come down to us.
You are my champion.
So now we know. I mean, okay, you said before there are two pairs that could have been chosen as the two champions. Now we know, since he is addressed.
Lucy.
Doctor directly. Yeah. Exactly, yeah. So it's Doc and Lucy.
It's not so much as foreshadowing as forehitting.
Yeah. Kablamatron, Sister Chalice appears, goes, hey, what the shit balls are you guys doing here? They go, Sister Thrift is floating around in the water. She's kind of lifeless. Problem solved. Cut to the Doc.
Chalice gets one of her little minions to go and get the abbot.
Yeah.
So they have a little chat before the abbot turns up.
Yeah, this is where the Doc basically talks about irony. He goes, well, the people outside, they're enraged because
dreams of visions of death and whatever. They don't realise that these visions are originating from within the monastery.
And then the abbot turns up. And long story short on this bit, the abbot wants to kick both of them out.
Yeah.
Chalice seems to be a little bit on the side of good here in this conversation.
Yeah.
And the abbot wants to kick both of them out. But Lucy, who has returned, thankfully, to her characterisation of being brainy, realises that she's female, the sister is female. If she was to turn around and go, I want to be a nun, then Sister Chalice will...
Has no choice but to...
Well, it's not that has no choice. Would do. Not no choice. Chalice is a good person and therefore would do it.
I think that answers my next question, because my next question was going to be, why doesn't the doc do the same thing?
Right.
Hi, I want to be a monk.
If because Chalice is a good person.
Yeah, you're right. And the abbot is a kind of a douchebag.
So, long story short, Lucy gets to stay and the doc is thrown out of the window. Literally.
Almost a high five moment.
Self high five. Right, so the doctor falls out the window and he lands on top of
a tent, I think.
Oh, does he? Oh, I thought he just landed on the ground, but
okay.
No, I think he scares a camel.
Yeah, that's true, but I think he lands on a tent because there is an actual sort of funny element to the story where he goes, well, yeah, your tent broke my fall, and then the guy whose tent it is says, your fall broke my tent.
Do you know what? This episode, I just didn't like it enough to actually pay any attention to the funny bits because I never noticed them.
Yeah. I've lowered my score since we had a chat on Skype the other day, by the way. Anyway.
So anyway, the doctor gets up from the tent and then using the telephone phones Hayden.
Does he really? I thought it was, my note goes, blam, Tangent's phone rings. I thought Hayden was calling him.
No, he presses last number redial and gets Hayden.
He calls the Hayden-meister. Okay.
And Hayden says, yep, saw you thrown out the window and guess what? I'm standing right next to you.
Yeah, oh, you're right. Yeah. Does he have a gun on him?
Not as far as I know.
He seems very
in my mind, and normally in these episodes you get a really good impression of what people look like. They describe things very well. No one in this episode is really well described apart from being blue. No one.
That's true, and I have to confess to you, during the entire audiobook, I'm picturing not the Hayden-meister and Brother Tangent as wearing snowboard gear.
Well, I see Brother Tangent as looking like the meddling monk from the Time Meddler, but young. I see Danahill in...
So basically a young monk.
Yeah, I see Danahill as a space marine from Halo.
Oh, so he's wearing like uniform and everything?
I have no basis for this whatsoever, and I've got nothing in this episode to disagree with me.
That's very true.
Or agree with me, but...
No, that's true. That's a really good point. There is absolutely no foundation for however you may choose to visualise them.
And you know, normally this is not a problem with the audiobooks, ever, because they describe things very well. When we met someone like Hayden Drew, we knew from the descriptions of what they were like, what they'd be wearing, and it was futuristic snowboarding gear. For example, in Dead London, you could tell from the period gear which period's in what those people were wearing. This has no description. There's no descriptive element. You know, you could tell from spring-heeled Sophie's contraptions and the things that she had, what she was carrying, and all these sort of things. Not a single thing in this episode which tells me what these people are, apart from like some sort of Blue Man Group meets Smurfs.
So basically blue is what you're saying.
They are the Blue Man Group.
They are the Blue Man Group. Yeah. Anyway, let's get this story over and done with, dude. So, the Hayden-meister, or not the Hayden-meister, who cares, American guy, he is quite threatening. But he does go from distrusting the doc to, hey, check this out, I'm going to volunteer every piece of information that you require in approximately 5 seconds.
Yeah, basically, he's looking for a skull.
Okay.
He's looking for a skull. Sorry, he doesn't say skull, he says relics.
Oh, okay.
Which he then says is called the Great Skull. It is a repository of all of Sobek's memories.
Yeah.
And his employer, General Snab, wants revenge for the death of his world. The death of Sobek.
Right. Yeah.
Which is fair.
That's fine. That's
and
cool.
He spent 100 years looking for the skull. So we are now 100 years after the visions that we had. So he's gone up from being a usurper to being a general in 100 years.
Okay. Puts it neatly into context.
Meanwhile,
in the monastery,
Absolute and the crocodile.
Yeah, Croc Monsieur. They're having a little chat that ends not greatly for the abbot, because Croc Monsieur literally bites his hand off.
But no, that's the hand I give blessings with.
Yeah.
and... The prince is now looking for a new champion because he can't have the doctor.
Yeah, and this
well,
is, by the way,
suspicious.
We've literally now jumped across 2 points in a bullet point list. Because
yes.
This is another one of those cutscene sequences. The next cutscene, by the way, is Lucy refusing to be shaved.
Well, yes, because,
and then bashing
but, well, yeah, because the exact way this happened was, I'm looking for a new champion. Next scene begins 1 second later being Lucy.
I refuse to be shaved. I'm going to run off.
It could hardly have pointed more to look who my new champion is going to be.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, so I don't want to be shaved. I like my hair, and Lucy leaves.
Yeah, exactly. Cut back to Doc and Danahill / Hademeister, whatever, who Danahill says that there's this sort of cerebral energy emanating from somewhere within the monastery.
Which are the visions and probably the skull's biomolecular.
Yeah, at which point the doctor makes a reference to some level of technobabble that, correct me if I'm wrong, we never hear again. He starts talking about a so-called bone brain.
Yeah, molecular data encryption inside a bone brain. Yeah, it's irrelevant.
Oh, okay. All right, fine.
To this story and any other.
Okay. Anyway, Hademeister goes, check it out, I work for this dude Snab and you should totally join us. And the doctor basically says, well, in order to rescue Lucy, sure, whatever you say, I'll join you guys.
So Danahill telephones up Croc 2 and says, right, the game is afoot.
Well, there's this rope that descends, right, from the monastery. The doctor sends the rope, and then that's where we get the game's afoot. The second the doctor is out of the frame, Danahill basically has the stereotypical Mr. Burns-esque scene where he goes, by the way, I'm the bad guy.
Yeah, and it's very like what happens in things like in the reviews you've done of the Romans.
Okay.
Where the doc is climbing the rope while literally next to him Danahill is standing going, yes, now you have fallen into my plan, Doctor.
Yes, Vaughn sneaking beside him.
Yes. That's literally what happens. So anyway, Chalice finds Absolute handless, and he doesn't actually admit it was eaten by a crocodile. He says there's no time to have his hand put back together again yet, so obviously that's something that the healing pool can do.
Yeah.
And the enemies of their guests are on their way.
Precisely. Chalice, Doc and company.
Basically. Yeah, Chalice quite rightly says that he's an idiot.
Yeah, a further 70 pointless cutscenes later, we get to Lucy and Croc Monsieur, and Lucy now has yet another vision. And it seems pointless right now, but it's going to have a further effect on her persona in a little bit.
Yes, come into the water.
Yeah, exactly.
Or all sorts of Curse of Fenric-like. But meanwhile, back at Chalice and Absolute.
God damn it, these bullet points are driving me mad.
Chalice says, right, I went against what you've said. I'm sorry, I've let the doctor back. Oh, right,
she lowered the rope.
She lowered the rope.
Yeah.
Right, she went all Rapunzel on them.
Yeah.
And nice. The doctor turns up and goes, yes, I am here for the Skull of Sobek.
Yeah.
Where is it?
Okie dokie. So, but we're not going to find out just yet. We're going to go back to the vision. So Lucy is now slowly but surely, let's put an emphasis on the slowly, being brainwashed and turned into a kind of crocodile. Not physically a crocodile, but she is mentally being turned into one of the Croc Monsieurs.
Yeah, literally this goes on for about half an hour.
Yeah.
And it is just the old prince talking to Lucy.
Sure. So now it turns out Croc Madame is Sobek's champion, blah blah blah, cutscenes, who gives a damn. Doc is now outing the abbot as a culprit in front of all of the brothers.
The Doc and the abbot have this sort of how to do, and then great flames engulfs.
Yeah, it's vision time again.
And Croc 1 basically turns around and goes, look who my champion is from Blackburn, England, Lucy Miller. So the Doc says, right, staying now, gonna go and rescue Lucy.
Right. So have we at this point found out what the skull is, or have I've gotten this in the wrong order? All right, fine. So, okay. So we now know Lucy is one of the champions. We also know the Doctor is the other champion, i.e. cue the Mortal Kombat soundtrack, because now those two are going to fight to the death, anyway.
Yeah, so what happens then is flames vanish and the Doc says, right, the prince obviously has a skull.
Okay.
For no reason, because now the skull can give visions.
Wait, what? Dude, this is something that I have not picked up on at all.
Well, the Doctor says to Chalice that because the prince can sort of give these visions out to people, then he must have the skull, because it's the skull that's creating the visions.
Oh, okay.
So where the fuck is it? The abbot then points out that today's reading was from chapter whatever of the Triumphs of Sobek. And he says the skull was 300 cubits long and 30 cubits high.
Right.
Approximately the same size as a great hall.
Yeah.
So basically, that's massive. And
yeah, and the doctor goes, yeah, well, this is basically... At the time, I was thinking, oh, it's the pool.
Yes, that's right. So it's not. Yeah, that's the most logical thing.
Exactly. That was my theory. It turns out, no dice, buddy, because...
It's the whole hall.
It's the entire hall. Yeah, it's the new hall, which was paid for by this anonymous benefactor, as the note said on the door.
door, and who is this anonymous benefactor?
And Chalice
fucking corpus,
yeah, Chalice.
God damn it, I hate this.
This makes no sense.
Oh, this is so dumb.
And then Danahil arrives.
Okay. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. He's
thank God.
With like a bunch of troops. Right. My notes must be completely out of order, by the way, because I've got this in a very different order.
Well, the crocodile troopers turned up. They are troopers who are crocodiles.
Oh, God.
Wearing armor in my head.
So much potential luggage. So.
And they are being led off these big sort of spaceship type things by head crocodile.
Okay. Nab. So now, this may be slightly out of order, doesn't matter. The doctor rings up Chalice and Abbott. Absolute goes, hey, you guys need to destroy the skull.
Yes.
Right? Yeah? That's now, right? And they go, well, we're not really going to destroy the skull. We don't really know where the skull is. You know that it's the fucking hall, but how are we going to destroy the skull? Oh, here's the solution. You need to start chanting.
Yeah, basically, that summarized the next 10 minutes of this episode.
Yeah.
Because now, frankly, it is just a mess at this point.
Yeah, the fucking cappuccini are going to start chanting like you wouldn't believe. And they do. Turns out that kind of has an adverse effect on Mr. Coq Monsieur.
And start to have an effect on Lucy.
Exactly.
But and we actually get my only line in the episode I actually like.
Should we soundbite this? I don't even know which line it is. Do you want to soundbite it? Is it worth soundbiting?
I'd say so. It's delivered very well by Paul McGann.
Let's soundbite it.
Soundbite?
Soundbite!
Lucy, come back. Come back to us. Come back to me.
So we have that. We have Paul McGann acting his little heart out. And frankly, this just proves that he's a better actor than most of the rest of us.
Yeah, that's true. So now Lucy is snapping out of it, but instead the skull is now trying to enter the doc's mind.
We get cutscenes of Schnab and the prince. Schnab and the prince having tea.
Yes. And now they're turning up with the dog going, hey, which one of us won? Wait, excuse me, what? You were mortal enemies a moment ago. You've got your fucking troops inside the monastery right now. You should be firing at each other. You should be turning each other into handbags. But instead you're going, hey, doctor, which one of you two won?
My theory is this is a two-parter, right?
Yeah, okay.
And someone accidentally trimmed off 40 minutes from the middle of this episode.
That may well be the case.
And we only get the beginning and the end. There's no middle to this episode.
No,
because true. Magically now, they're going, who's what?
Yeah.
The doctor is trying to surrender to Lucy.
Yeah.
Lucy is just turning around and going...
yeah, but she's also snapped out of it at this point.
She snapped out of it.
Yeah.
And the doctor basically says, you're both fucking losers.
Yeah, exactly my note, by the way. And
the skull starts breaking down.
The skull starts breaking down as a consequence of the chanting of the cappuccini dudes. So now, General Snab and
the old prince,
they're like, oh, fuck you guys. No, you have to make up your mind. And if you're not going to make up your minds, then we're going to reboot this fight. So now they start fencing. The ceiling is starting to break. And we basically just time cut out of this fight. Out of this thing that could have ended heroically, majestically. Just, we could have had two potential, almost messianic creatures, right? Or characters. But we just leave them. We time cut and it's over.
Because the next scene we get is Lucy wanting to leave the sisterhood so she can go back into the TARDIS. It's like...
But it makes no sense. We had two characters that could easily... Either one, like, independently could have been turned into a martyr. Like, the one who lost could have been turned into a martyr, and we've got all the protesters outside the monastery as well. There's so much potential there, and nothing
has done. What happened to Danahil?
That's such a good question. What the fuck happened to Danahil?
I think the problem here is there were no good and bad guys.
Oh, that's a good point.
Right?
That's so true. There are just the other people.
There are just guys. Yeah. There's no one to root for. Because normally you'd be rooting for whatever side the Doc and Lucy take.
Yeah.
But you've got one on each. So that's a wash. So you then try and go, what should we do about Abbott and Chalice? But there's one of each. It's a wash. So what we've got here is we've got no one to root for. We've got no one to care about. We've got nothing to hang ourselves on. And then we've got a narrative that just goes,
boom, done.
What is the point?
Yeah, there is no point. So yeah. Let's round this off. So we time cut to who cares when. And Lucy is, as you said, she's trying to basically say, listen, I don't want to have my head shaved. The Doc is trying to find excuses for her to be defrocked. And I would as well.
Yeah.
Don't blame him. And that's basically it, right? The Abbott comes up with this.
We get another nice line about Lucy, you know, is basically saying that Doc is now under her spiritual guidance because that's what they agree in order to get Lucy out of it. Why they don't just run off in the TARDIS, I don't know. Then there's some twee bit about rain coming. And frankly, that's the end of the episode. Thank God next week is Grand Theft Cosmos.
Yeah, such a good episode, by the way.
Yeah, next week.
The next one.
Next week.
The next one is fantastic.
Don't listen to this episode. Go and if you're thinking of getting Skull of Sobek, you're not going to miss anything. What you should do is go and buy Grand Theft Cosmos and hear a brilliant episode. Come back to us. We're whobackwhen.com, who will be reviewing that next week, because frankly, this was a mess.
This was a total mess. Yeah.
Reviews. Well, before we do the reviews, actually, we want to thank Gallifrey and Buccaneer, who, if you go to whobackwhen.com and look at the page for human resources, you can see our very first mini review.
Thank you again, by the way. Thank you so much.
So don't forget, if you do have mini reviews for the audiobooks, please send them in to whobackwhen.com and we will see what we can do with them.
Yeah, absolutely. Leave it as a message. If you got a mini review, leave it as a message on the website at the contact form, or send it to info@whobackwhen.
That's great.
Fantastic.
Reviews.
Oh, who's starting off?
Oh, you start.
Oh, really? I've got very little to say. This episode has very poor structure. It has no clear protagonist-antagonist. Sorry, it has a very clear protagonist, obviously. It's the Doctor, or Doctor and Lucy. But it has no clear antagonist. It seems as though everyone who is not the protagonist is just irrelevant, in a way. They're having a fight, and I don't know which side to pick. At first, I was thinking Snab is the bad guy, because Snab is the guy who's trying to perform a coup d'etat, but very possibly he has a good reason for it. We never find out. I would have liked to find out about that. You mentioned very, very rightly what happens to Daniel. I have no idea. I don't think anyone knows. I would have liked to find out about that. I would have liked to find out more about the people outside the monastery, because it seems to me as though those people, even being there in the first place, it only serves the plot, but it doesn't serve rationality. Why the shit would they be trying to attack a monastery just because there are visions that apparently everyone is experiencing? If anything, the monastery is there to perform, to, you know, keep the balance. And if it keeps the balance, then surely they are, quote unquote, the good guys, and thus the protesters should not be protesting them. They should be seeking comfort in the monastery as opposed to trying to break down its walls. And also, if they are armed with lasers and there's a fucking monastery, they would have broken down the walls. Okay, sorry, even though very little makes sense in this story, though, I have to say, I found it quite entertaining. I mean, there is so much potential to this story. It has a good narrative that has been very poorly fleshed out. And as such, I'm giving this, not a high mark, I'm giving this a 1.9.
Okay, that's fair. This actually felt like a fairly short episode when you're listening to it. Normally, yeah. Episodes where it's not that good tend to stretch on and on and on to forever, like London and Horror of Glamrock.
Yeah.
But this felt so short, and it's because it is a bullet point of episodes.
It is.
You know, it's just one thing after another. It's set pieces. You know, you go from here to here to here, but there's no linking narrative between them. Sheridan Smith is good. And, you know, she plays Evil Lucy really nicely. It would have been a brilliant two-parter if they'd have filled in the bits in between with the missing linking narrative they seem to have taken out.
Yeah.
It felt like this probably was recorded as about maybe an hour and 10 minutes and had to be cut down.
Okay.
It felt like it overran.
So
and because like, this was on BBC.
There's half an hour missing, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Okay.
It races towards a conclusion which has no importance to the plot whatsoever.
Mm.
You know, I've got bigger questions about those people who are outside the monastery. Planet is perfectly symmetrical. There's only sand dunes out there. Where have these people come from? Why have they come to a monastery? Where have these people come from? Right, so the visions don't seem to go outside of the Great Hall at all.
Yeah.
So why are they affecting the people outside the walls going on?
Well, they are referred to as refugees in the start.
And pilgrims. And Glastonbury Festival people. It
yeah,
makes no sense.
No, there isn't. Exactly, that's what I'm saying. There,
and
there
Danahill,
is a plot device. They're
Danahill,
not there as a fucking...
Danahill, who has been outside the entire time, then breaks in with his space shuttles.
Because apparently that's no problem. So why the fuck didn't they do that before? Sorry about the F-bombs, by the way. This story has got me really upset.
Now, the good point about this episode.
Okay.
It's got the Doc and Lucy in it. Paula Gann has given less to do this time, and they haven't learned their lesson. They split the Doc and Lucy up.
Yeah.
And some of the best episodes occur where you have the Doc and Lucy riffing off each other, and you don't get that in this episode. This is a waste of... It's not important to the plot. It's not Dead London Bad. You know, it isn't, because at least you can understand what's going on in this episode. It's a 1.6.
1.6?
Yeah.
Nice one.
I refined it down very slightly before the start of this, because I realised that I'd given it the same score as I'd given the other episodes, and I realised I didn't quite like this one nearly as much. So, yeah, this is waste of time. 45 minutes, go and do something else. Watch an episode of Doctor Who, new series, any of them, better than this. Except Love and Monsters, that's terrible. So, on to our mini-review for Skull of Sobek from Gallifreyan Buccaneer.
Hello, Mr. Buccaneer.
Gallifreyan Buccaneer begins. This is one of the big clunkers of the EDAs, alongside Phobos and the Beast of Orlok. Despite a brilliantly fun bit of evil voice work from Sheridan Smith, which he tends to end up doing a lot in these adventures. Spoilers. the plot is just very standard hoofer.
The location of the story I enjoyed, and the culture it set up was interesting, but the more it went on, the less interest that I got, as I couldn't find any reason to care about the characters. Hell, even in Phobos, I was wondering what the villain was. Here, they're crocodiles. There's nothing much here to separate it from the other dull Who stories, such as the Fourth Doctor's Underworld.
But having Art Malik in a Big Finish story was lovely, and I enjoyed his portrayal of the Abbot Absolute.
Pains me to give the story a bad review, as I very much enjoy Mark Platt's work on Doctor Who, with Ghostlight being not only my favourite story of the Seventh Doctor, but in my top three Doctor Who stories of all time. His other work on Big Finish, such as An Earthly Child and Old Mortality, are far better.
And he concludes by giving The Skull of Sobek a 1.1. And I will add my own comments to this by totally agreeing with you about Mark Platt's other work. Ghostlight is also one of my favourites. And An Earthly Child is a brilliant audiobook, which we will get to, because even though it is quite late on and it's a slightly outside of the EDAs, we will be covering it.
Yeah, I look forward to it. I genuinely did not recognise a single one of the episodes that, or audiobooks that you've referred to here, aside from Phobos, obviously. So yeah, awesome. Dudemeister, thank you so much for sending in your review.
Hoopakwine.
Alright then.
Next time, join us for Grand Theft Cosmos. That is really good.
It's a fantastic
heist movie in Stockholm.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's set in Stockholm. That's fantastic.
And it has two extra special guest stars from Human Resources, one of which...
Oh, wow. Massive spoiler, dude.
One of which is a female, therefore played by Katarina Olsen. Which doesn't give anything away.
Excuse me, both of them are female.
Both of them played by Katarina Olsen.
Oh my god, that's amazing. I can't wait. So, yeah, until whatever we review the next time, be it Grand Theft Cosmos or one of the TV serials, thank you so much for listening. Please do yourself a favor. Do what I do. Try to absorb as much condensed intellectual information as possible from this selfsame gentleman next to me right now, JD. Follow him on Twitter. He is at Marius Kane. That is Kane with a K. While you're at it, why not follow me? I'm at Punkin. You know how to spell that. Like us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/whobackwhen. Please do subscribe and rate and review us on iTunes. We would appreciate it massively.
Good night.
Be rad and excellent to each other. Ciao, ciao.
Who back when?